All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Seven Steps to Awakening. And tonight I am going to be starting with quote 7-Eleven. So I'll put a link to 7-Eleven in the room. And what I always like to do is just begin with a song, which for me is just a moment of being still. So I'm going to my iTunes and looking to see what jumps out at me. And all right. This is a song called Hebrew Man. When this song is listened to with the wrong mind, it might sound, I don't know, a little arrogant, because the song talks about how Hebrew is the language of God and the language of the prophets, and someday everyone will speak Hebrew. However, when I hear the song, to me, the word Hebrew is a symbol for silence. And so because the word Hebrew is a symbol for silence, for the language that is beyond words, I adore the song. And that is the song that my eyes landed on as I was kind of spinning through iTunes to see what would pop up. Also, I love this song because I discovered it while in Israel. I've been to Israel 3 times, and this song was always a part of the trip. They always played it on the tour bus, so I also love it for that reason. But anyway, with that little intro, this is Jonathan Settle, Hebrew Man.
Thank you.
for that musical introduction, Jonathan. All right, so as I mentioned, we are here for the 7 Steps to Awakening. We are going to begin with quote 7-11. And let me just read from the 7 Steps to Awakening. By the way, I am reading from Step 3. Here's the quote. If it is realized that the perceived mind itself is unreal, then it is clear that the perceived world is unreal too. Again, if it is realized that the perceived mind itself is unreal, that it is clear that the perceived world is unreal too. When I first became a student of A Course in Miracles, obviously I was a student of A Course in Miracles because it called to me, because I got those inner confirmations that told me, you know, this is truth, or now I would say it was pointing to truth. But I do remember one thing that was not easy for me to accept about the teachings of A Course in Miracles is the idea that the world is not real, or that the world does not exist. And of course, probably you all know this, I would imagine we all go through these same phases, but the reason it was so difficult is because, look, here I am in a world. I can reach out and touch it. You know, I can feel this desk. I mean, who am I talking to? Aren't I talking to people who can hear me? Maybe interact with me the way Jim did when he wrote on the board a little bit ago. So it was very, very hard for me to even begin to accept that the world is not real, or even more. I think it's lesson 132 points out that the world does not exist at all. But one thing that I've had ever since I've been on this spiritual path, whenever an idea is presented by something that I trust, and I trusted A Course in Miracles, I don't close my mind to it and say no. I've never done that. I've always kind of said more like, I don't know how that could be true. It's completely alien to my experience, but I'm willing to see differently. And so because of that openness that I have, you know, teachings can come to me directly that show me what's meant by those words. Words such as the world is an illusion, the world is not real, the world does not exist. And I think maybe I'll just share a little with you about the clarity that's come to me about those words. Lots of people share those words. You know, they'll say, well, the world's just an illusion, or the world is not real, or the world does not exist. But because they never share their own words of what that means, I'm not real clear sometimes if they know what that means, or if they're just parroting what they've heard or read. You know, I can't tell if they've had their own experience, their own clarity, their own realizations. So I'll share with you in different words. The world is not real. I'll start with that one. The world is not real. The clarity that came to me with that term, real, is that in order to be real, it has to be eternal and unchanging. It's that simple. In order to be real, it cannot have a beginning, it cannot have an end, and it cannot change. And if it real doesn't mean, real doesn't mean that I can't have the experience of reaching out and touching it. Because I can have the experience of reaching out and touching this desk. The body, with its sense of touch and also its ability to move, can reach out and touch this desk. And if the mind thinks the fact that I can reach out and touch it and feel it and have that experience means real, well, then the mind is going to argue this is real. But that's not what real means. Real means no beginning, no ending, and unchanging. Well, the world, if we look at the world, we can't say that the world is unchanging. Right? We can't say that the world is unchanging. The desk itself, this desk had a beginning. At some point, you know, this is a wooden desk, an oak desk, so at some point there was an oak tree, but even the oak tree had a beginning, right? And then somebody cut down that oak tree and crafted it into a desk, and it became a desk, but that was a beginning. And I think we all pretty much know that this desk is not eternal. Someday, sometime, in some way, this desk will no longer exist. But not just the desk, what about the body? The body itself, the thing that is reaching out and touching the desk and having the experience of feeling the wood, right? It had a beginning. It'll have an end. And it does nothing but change. You know, I look at the body now, and this is the body of a 55-year-old woman. Well, once upon a time, I looked at this body, and it was the body of a 5-year-old girl or a 21-year-old. I don't know what you call a 21-year-old. I didn't quite feel like a woman yet, even though legally I was. A 21-year-old female, I'll say. You know, the body is always changing. So under the definition of real, I can't say that the body is real. Right? So the world is not real. That is a fact. Because it has a beginning, it has an end, and it changes. Real means eternal and changeless. So what about illusion? The world is an illusion. The definition of illusion is something that appears to be something that it is not. And you can see that like with a magician. It appears the magician, you know, cut the woman in half and then brought her back together and there she is whole again. Or it appears he made the woman or the car disappear. An illusion is something that appears to be something, but it's not. And the world, well, first of all, it appears to be real because, again, we can reach out and touch things. We can experience things. But even more, what I was really taught that the word illusion is pointing to is that the world seems to be outside of us. We seem to be in the world, and we seem to be victim to the forces of the world. You know, we're the little bitty person in a great big world. And, you know, if a nuclear bomb for some reason should be, a nuclear missile should be shot to where I am, you know, then I am destroyed and all of this, right? I'm a little bitty person in a great big world. And that's an illusion because every appearance in the world comes from us. And in fact, the world is within us, not us as bodies. This, of course, is where we get very confused, but us as creative, divine, I'll call it for now, mind awareness. And so as we, of course, focus on certain types of thoughts and certain types of energies are generated from the types of thoughts that we're focusing on, the world then follows that. So the world follows us, but it doesn't appear to be that way. So the world is an illusion. We're the magicians. The problem is we don't understand our magic. We don't understand, most people in the world do not understand how our focus of attention creates the world. But it doesn't appear that we're creating the world at all. Therefore, the world is an illusion. And then the third statement is that the world does not exist. That was probably the hardest one for me to accept because, again, I can reach out and touch things in the world, right? I can feel it. It definitely seems to exist. But then I had to be shown what exist means. Something that exists. How can I say this? I know what it means, but I got to find the words. Because all the words that I'm looking at in my mind could be misunderstood, but sometimes that's just the way it is, isn't it? Words can be misunderstood, so maybe I should just go for it. Something that exists, exists completely on its own and does not need to be made. So what I am and what you are, right? Not the body, not the personality, but the awareness, the intelligence awareness, that exists. If the world completely blew itself up, if a nuclear war started and the entire world or the entire earth was destroyed, what we are would not be destroyed because we exist. If somehow the universe imploded and the entire universe somehow just disappeared, you know, got gobbled up by a great big black hole or something, what we are, the awareness that we are, would still remain unchanged. We exist. The world doesn't exist. And I'm not just referring to the same thing I was with real. Like I said, real means eternal and non-changing. And of course, we are that which is real. But exist means it doesn't have to be made. So the world would not appear at all if it wasn't for us giving the attention to certain thoughts and therefore continually making the world. If somehow we ceased to give attention to thought, all mankind, we'll say, ceased to give attention to thought in the same moment and gave our attention only to pure silence, the world would disappear. See, the world does not exist. Like a dream does not exist, right? When you wake up, it disappears. It never actually existed, although it was experienced. It didn't have existence. And what's really cool about the word exist is what exists is what we are. I'm going to call that I am. I am exists. And the reason the world appears to exist is because we're looking at it through our own existence. Just like the reason a nighttime dream appears to exist is you're looking at it through your own existence. It's actually our own existence that we're experiencing, seeing, knowing, and we mistake it for something else. But the world does not exist. It cannot even appear unless we are giving attention to the thoughts that cause it to appear. It doesn't have its own existence. So the world is not real. It is not reality because it is not eternal and changeless. The world is an illusion. Because it appears to be outside of us and we appear to be victims to the world, but in reality we are the makers of the world. And the world does not exist because it doesn't have its own foundation of existence because it is made, right? It's a made appearance rather than something that actually exists. So the quote says, 7-Eleven says, if it is realized that the perceived mind itself is unreal, then it is clear that the perceived world is unreal too. So if we sit in meditation and especially during the first part of meditation, when the mind is going yada, 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 you know, talking about whatever the heck it's talking about. And, you know, we're continually turning our attention away from it, turning our attention to awareness or to the breath or whatever we do. But then somehow it starts chatting again and attention goes back into it. I'm sure you all know that when we get to that point in meditation where we're able to stand back enough that we kind of hold our attention outside of the thought, which means we don't get absorbed into the thought. And we're watching the thoughts now. This, of course, is prior to going into the silence. But we're watching the thoughts without giving it attention. One thing that you really notice in that phase in meditation is just how the mind will talk about anything and how the anything it's talking about will constantly change. If you're not getting engrossed in the topic, right, just different topics start to come. And at some point, and I assume you guys experience this in meditation, but I don't know because I only know my meditation experience. At some point, those thoughts don't even have anything to do with the Regina personality. I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know if I'm becoming so subtle now that I'm picking up on other thoughts or if the mind is just now trying to grab me and pull me into a dream world or what's going on. But other thoughts start to show up that have nothing to do with Regina or her life or her perceptions. But as I said and just watched that, what becomes aware, yeah, stories that are not mine at all, Lynn says. Exactly. I don't know where they come from, but they do as you sit and watch them longer. These strange things show up. I have nothing to do with who I appear to be. But what happens as you watch the mind while it's going through all this tumbling around is you start to realize that the mind is nothing real at all. It doesn't even make any real sense. It doesn't even have a real purpose. It doesn't even stick to a purpose like, here's the stuff we have to do today. Right? If I don't pay attention to the purpose of, here's the stuff we have to do today, it'll jump to another thing and then another thing. And pretty soon it's jumping to things that don't even have anything to do with a Regina character. I don't know where these things come from. But you start to see the mind as, I don't know how to put it into words, it's like a dream. The mind is like a dream. And when you start to see that the mind is really just this dream thing, then you can look at the world and you can start to see that the world is the same dream thing, just in a, I'll call it in a hardened form. You know, like the thoughts are more subtle dream and the world is it appears to be form, right? But you start seeing the same non-purpose, not making sense, the same craziness, you know, it just, the whole world begins to feel like a dream. And this isn't an intellectual thing. I think this is one place, Jesus says in the Course, even the real world is a dream. This is one place where I think, although I think A Course in Miracles has been a wonderful benefit to the world, maybe one place where it's not quite so helpful is that we tend to believe the Course so much that we never go into our own direct experience of truth. You know, the Course says da-da-da-da-da, and we just accept it at an intellectual level. And not everyone investigates with their own direct experience and finds out for themselves. And I feel, and I know I'm not the only one, I feel that intellectual spirituality is a huge obstacle to truth because it blocks our investigation. So when I say that the world is a dream and it begins to be experienced as a dream. Notice the word experience. It begins to be experienced as a dream. You can see that same nonsensicalness to it that you see in the mind. And so that's what this quote is saying to me. This quote is saying that if you watch the mind enough, really watch the mind carefully. Don't believe it. You can't watch something and believe it at the same time. You have to be stepped outside of it enough to just be watching it. But if you really just observe the mind, when you start seeing the non-reality of the mind, what also starts to happen is you start to see the non-reality of the world. You start to have a sense for that, not an intellectual idea. You start to have a sense. And what's really cool about the sense that the world is not real is that at the same, when that sense really starts to occur, you also get off the roller coaster ride. You don't need to seek the highs. You don't need to seek pleasure in the way that you used to seek pleasure. But also the lows, when these things happened that, you know, you would not have invited to happen on a conscious level. You don't get pulled down by them. What starts to happen as the world begins to feel like a dream is you start to become more and more aware of reality, which is what you are. You start to notice more and more that you are constant, you are non-changing, you are non-affected, and the dream can happen. Without happening to you. And that's much different than an intellectual teaching that you've adopted as a belief that the world is not real. Because when there's an intellectual teaching that you've adopted as a belief, you can say that as much as you want, right? The world is not real, the world is not real, but you're still seeking after pleasure, and you still suffer with pain. I'll just put pain as the label on all of those things you would not have consciously invited. The sense of reality and non-reality is not an honest part of the experience. And so what's really important about this quote, at least to me, is that this quote is pointing in the way to move away from the intellectual spirituality, which comes through study and discussion. It's pointing away from the intellectual spirituality, and it's pointing how to get to the point, I don't want to say develop, because you don't really develop the sense, but get to the point where the sense is your direct experience. And it's telling you the way to do that is to watch, really observe the mind. That as you start to see that the mind is not real, the sense that the world is not real will also come. And there are different ways to watch the mind. You know, I watched the mind long before I ever meditated. So obviously meditation is one way to watch the mind. But I used to watch the mind through journaling. I would journal every day, sometimes twice a day, morning and evening, but usually always in the evening. I would journal. I would go back and look at the experiences that came in the day. I would look at my thoughts very carefully. I would look at the fears. I would look at the guilt. I would look at the unworthiness. I would look at the judgment. But I would just look. And you know what really started to give me the sense that the world is not real first? That the mind was not real? Because I did get that sense first. Where I really started to get the sense that the mind was not real was whenever I seemed to have a problem. Problems were the best thing for me to observe. Because when I seemed to have a problem, not a minor problem, but what appears to be a pretty big problem, right, in life, when I seemed to have a problem, the mind would start offering up solutions. And I would watch those solutions. I would write them out on paper. I would watch those solutions. But then the mind had fears about the solutions. And the solutions in the mind became a new problem. And then the mind had to think of new solutions for the new problems that came out of the solutions, right? And I could also see the mind argue both sides. It would argue, yes, do this. Here's why. If you don't do this, this is what's going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And then half a minute later, no, don't do that. Because if you do do that, here's what's going to happen, and blah, blah, blah. And I started to really get the sense that the mind was not real. Remember what real means? Changeless. In fact, I would say the mind didn't even have a real purpose, a changeless purpose. The mind was changing all the time. It was not even consistent. And this one head, this one person's head, talking about one problem, it couldn't even be consistent about that. It couldn't even be consistent in finding one solution to one problem and being comfortable with that one solution. Right? It couldn't even do that. So the more that I watched the mind, the more I realized that the mind was not real. If we don't watch the mind, this is the sad part. If we don't watch the mind is just as unreal, just as inconsistent. In fact, I think Jesus calls it insane in the Course. And yet, if we don't see that, we're being whipped around constantly by the mind. It, you know, I almost have this vision of the mind holding us by the feet and whipping us around and around, and occasionally our head hits a wall, right? That's what happens when we're believing the mind. We're slaves and we're getting beat up. I saw a movie today. It's called Miracles from Heaven. And one thing that was really interesting to me in that movie is that the father in the movie, and they were a Protestant religion, I don't know which one, but the father in the movie had this faith that I would call true faith. He didn't know how things were going to work out. They had a daughter who was very, very sick. She could die. The medical expenses were outrageous. They didn't have the money to pay for them. You know, so it appeared lots of problems. And the father did not know how things were going to work out. He just knew that they would. And the mother, she was the one being whipped around by the mind. And you could witness her being whipped around. And you could witness him. I'm sure all the same ideas were showing up in his mind, but somehow he was sticking with the faith. And you could see the difference in these two people. So the mind is not real. And as we come to see that the mind is not real, the sense that the world is not real arises too. And then we are not as affected by the world, and that's natural. That's natural. Things still happen, things still come and go, but we become aware of the constant nature, which is what this father was, even though he wouldn't have been able to focus on it in exactly the same way that we're learning to focus on it. It wouldn't have been a part of his spiritual training. That's what he was somehow tuning into, was just to hold constant. You know, and he didn't have any answers to any questions. He didn't know how things were going to be better, how things were going to work out, how things were okay. He didn't know. But he was finding that constancy and staying there anyway. So again, the quote is saying, if it is realized that the perceived mind itself is unreal, if it is realized that the perceived mind itself is unreal, then it is clear that the perceived world is unreal too. And what's not said in that quote, but it's really important, is that as you see that the mind is unreal and you see that the world is unreal, what also naturally arises is the sense, the awareness of what is real, which is yourself. right? Nothing real can be threatened. That's you. So let's go ahead and let's look at the journal. Let's see what I wrote in the journal when I contemplated this about 3 years ago. 711A says, the mind, the body, and world form a triad that reinforces illusion. The mind, the idea I am a person, and the body form a triad that reinforces a self, right? A seeming me. Both reinforcement triads are conditioning. The mind is at the root of both conditioning triads. So in my journal, in this part of my journal, when I'm talking about these triads, I'm talking about the things that work together and keep us convinced that the world is real, that the body is real, that I am a person. And the first thing it says, the mind, the body, and the world form a triad. And I talked a little bit about that at the beginning of this hour, right? Because I can reach out and touch this desk and it feels real. I'm convinced that the world is real, right? So the body, the sense of touch, the world, a hard form appearance that I can touch, and then the mind's decision. Yep, it's real. I can feel it, right? I can feel it. That's a part of what keeps us believing that the illusion is truth. The other is the mind, the idea I am a person, and the body. That reinforces the sense of self, of a me, right? There's the mind always talking about me and my problems and my life, my ideas, my opinions, me, right? There's the body, which I can look down at. I mean, the only body that I take to the shower is this one, right? So that body that I take to the shower really helps to reinforce that I am a person. And then, of course, there's the mind always talking about me. And then there's just the idea that I'm a person. You put these three together, and they seem to reinforce this. And if I pay enough attention to the mind, yeah, I was thinking about the song too. I know exactly which song you're talking about. Maybe we'll play it if I get done talking and there's a few minutes left. I want to talk about me. Is that the song you're thinking of? And there's also a great Beatles song, right? I Me Mine. But, you know, if I focus enough, which is what almost all humans do, if I focus enough on the thoughts of my mind and this body and how I'm cold and then I'm hot and, you know, all of that stuff, I'm never ever going to get away from the idea that I'm a person, that I'm a body, because the evidence is so convincing. But one thing that starts to happen if we really watch the mind, whether we watch the mind in meditation or watch the mind in journaling or watch the mind in some other way, one thing that really starts to happen when we watch the mind is we start seeing, it's almost like the threads in the tapestry. We start seeing how the mind is talking about me and talking about the world and talking about the body, and we start seeing that the mind is constantly, constantly reinforcing these ideas. And the whole tapestry is being formed by these threads. And then we start to wonder, what would happen if I pull this thread out of the tapestry? And then this thread, and then this thread, meaning, what would happen if I stopped paying attention to that mind chatter about me? If I stopped paying attention to that mind chatter about a world and about problems and about my opinions and my dreams and my regrets? And what if I just quit paying attention? Would I pull those threads right back out of that tapestry? And would the entire tapestry disappear? That tapestry, by the way, in A Course in Miracles is called the veil. Would the veil then just disappear? And once you start asking that question, now again, you don't want to adopt a mental belief, yes, it would. You want to start practicing that. You say, okay, I'm going to try this. I'm going to find out what happens if I stop paying attention to thoughts about me, my opinions, the way I think things should be. If I stop thinking so much about this body, if I stop thinking so much about the world, what if when I catch myself thinking, I just kind of let it go, turn my attention elsewhere? And I think you guys know that the way that I used to do this in the beginning was I would turn my attention to an inspirational thought for the day. So if I found myself thinking about some problem, I would say, okay, I see my mind is thinking about this problem. I don't want to be focused on this. What is my inspirational thought for the day? And I pull it out. Maybe it's something like, ignorance lasts only so long as the mind functions. And I turn my attention to that. Ah, ignorance lasts only so long as the mind functions. And then just kind of set in the stillness after that. And then at some point, as you know, the mind starts to chatter again, and then I would just read the quote again. Ah, ignorance lasts only so long as the mind functions. And eventually, I was moved from having a different daily quote, which I used to call the single quiet thoughts, to having a mantra. And I would have a mantra that lasted for months. My first mantra was, I am that I am. And every time I caught the mind thinking again about me, my opinions, how things should be in my mind, et cetera, I would turn to the mantra and hang out in the stillness of the mantra. And I had my first mantra for around 9 months. I am that I am. And then my second mantra came. My second mantra was, abide in me as I abide in you. And I'll tell you, each mantra, by the way, as I would say the mantra for months, each mantra led to a different shift. Like, I was not aware of awareness before the I am that I am mantra. Somehow in the practice of the actual practice of the I am that I am mantra, I began to become aware of changeless awareness. The abide in me as I abide in you mantra got me to the point where I was moving my attention inward during the day instead of always being focused outward. I was looking in for intuition. What was intuition guiding me today? What was the world moving me to do now, rather than thinking and being outward focused? And I had a couple other mantras after that, but I don't even remember what they were. I don't remember what the third mantra was, but I remember what its power was, what it did. It increased my desire for awakening. It was a mantra that really increased that desire, took it to another level. And then the fourth mantra, the last mantra that I had, was simply be still. And whenever I would catch the mind thinking again, I would just say, be still. Shift into awareness, shift into intuition, shift into quiet. And now I don't have a mantra. I just look. Like, the need for the mantra is not there. So if I catch myself, you know, thinking again about anything, I just look. Looking enough is enough. Looking by itself is enough. Looking just, it just stops everything. I don't know how to describe that, but maybe some of y'all know what I'm talking about. Right, just the looking. So the point is, when I look at this particular journal entry, the mind, body, and world form a triad that reinforces illusion. The mind, the idea, I am a person, and the body form a triad that reinforces a self. Both reinforcement triads are conditioning, right? We're conditioned. We need some way of unconditioning, right, which the Course calls undoing. And these tools that I described, first the single quiet thoughts and then the mantras and now just the looking, these are the tools that are being used with me to undo this conditioning. But what's really important about the last line of this journal entry is it says the mind is at the root of both conditioning triads. In other words, there's the belief I am the body, right? How do I let go of the belief that I'm the body? Well, Buddha made, I'm not going to call it the mistake because, we all go through what we go through. But Buddha made, I don't know how else to finish the sentence if I don't want to use the word mistake. Buddha tried one way. Buddha tried letting go of the I am the body belief by ignoring the body, by ignoring the needs of the apparent needs of the body, not feeding it, not bathing it, etc., etc. And Buddha came to see, as you all probably know, that that was not the way. You don't let go of the I am the body belief by ignoring the body, because the body is not the root cause of the I am the body belief. The mind is the root cause of the I am the body belief. It's the mind chatter that we need to learn to not listen to. The thoughts of me, of mine, of what I want, of what I don't want, of what I think, of how I feel things should be, right? That's what needs to be let go. So the last sentence in this journal entry says, the mind is at the root of both conditioning triads, which is really nice, I think, because it means we don't have to let go of a physical world. We don't have to let go of a physical body. We only have to let go of a non-physical mind, thoughts. And to me, that sounds a whole lot easier, actually. Whole lot easier to let go of the non-physical thoughts, just to start losing interest in the stories in the mind. And as I start losing interest in the stories in the mind, the sense of what is real arises on its own. And I never had to fight to let go of a physical world or to let go of a physical body. I just had to let go of the thoughts about the physical world, about the body, and about me, most especially about me. I'm going to move on to 711B, which is the next journal entry I had based on my contemplation of this particular quote. And 711, before I read 711B, let me read the quote 711 again. 711 says, if it is realized that the perceived mind itself is unreal, then it is clear that the perceived world is unreal too. You see, again, I don't have to let go of a physical world. I don't have to let go of a physical body. I just let go of non-physical thoughts. That's a whole lot easier. If it is realized that the perceived mind itself is unreal, then it is clear that the perceived world is unreal too. That rises up naturally, the difference between what is real and what is unreal, as I let go of the mind. So 711B says, how is it helpful to acknowledge conditioning, reinforcing triads? Resting in self, this is true self, capital S, resting in self recognizes the hooks into illusion. Through wise recognition of these hooks, resting observes them without being pulled into conditioning. What is the advantage of not being pulled into conditioning? By staying outside of the reinforcing triads, mind, which is supported by both triads, grows weak. Weakened, it dies. When there is no mind, there is no delusion, so reality is realized. One thing that hasn't been defined here, I defined for you what it means when we say the world is not real, the world is an illusion, the world does not exist. I didn't define mind. So what is mind? Mind is that movement of thought which actually comes from the illusion itself. Mind is that movement of thought that's constantly running through your head. We call it chatter. But the interesting thing about it is that it actually comes from the illusion itself. We don't think, Jesus says in the Course, we think we think. We don't think. We receive thoughts. And I suppose this is why when in meditation, I can receive thoughts once I get deep enough that aren't even, quote, mine. They have nothing to do with this personality, but somehow something has become more subtle, more open or something. And these thoughts start coming in that have nothing to do with this me, right? But we receive the thoughts that appear to be my thoughts in the same way. We just receive them. We don't think. We receive them. And they're actually a part of the illusion itself. So, within the thoughts that come to us from the illusion, because we believe that we're the person, the character, in my case, Regina, with this life, certain thoughts will have hooks that get us interested. You know, like some of us might really think about our children and their problems. That might be a hook for me. Some of us might really think about our bodies. Maybe some of us are a lot more interested in losing weight, a lot more concerned about the wrinkles, the graying hair. And when those thoughts come in, it's a hook. Some of us may be much more concerned about our finances. And in some cases, even though we have lots and lots of money, the finances are a hook. Some of us may be very concerned about being responsible, right? Some of us may be very concerned about where our next joint or our next drink is going to come from, right? But we have these different hooks. So when these thoughts are received, we give our attention into those thoughts. And then we're completely absorbed by the me, me, me voice, which is also saying the world is real, the world is real, the world is real, right? No matter what they appear to be talking about, money, the body, you know, drugs, whatever, the children, what they're really saying is me, 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 and reinforcing that idea, and the world is real, the world is real, the world is real. So what this journal entry is recommending is, again, that we watch the mind enough to become familiar with what hooks me. Which types of thoughts, when received in the mind, am I much more likely to get completely absorbed in it? I lose any awareness of awareness. I might even lose any awareness of my purpose to awaken. Right? I'm completely into me and the world. So this journal entry is recommending that we watch and that we discover, get to know our own hooks. And why? Because when we become aware of our own hooks, really aware of them, we actually then weaken our susceptibility to them just by becoming aware of them. We weaken our susceptibility to them. So again, watching the mind is being recommended, but most specifically here, watch the mind for what hooks me. And again, you know, maybe some of us don't care at all or very little. I mean, maybe we're hooked a little, but we don't care at all about the body. You know, like, you know, the fact that we've gained 10 pounds, another 5 pounds, another 10 pounds, maybe that's a minor deal, but not a big deal. But for another one, you know, that could lead to thousands upon thousands upon thousands of thoughts a day. what am I going to do? I got to eat differently. I got to think about all these foods. I got to think about the calories. I got to think about the fat. I got to think about the carbohydrates. How am I going to work out? You know, blah, 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 right? So what are your hooks? What sucks you into the most thought, the easiest? Find out and become aware. Because when you're aware, then you reduce your susceptibility to those thoughts. You can start saying, oh, wait a minute, that's just one of my hooks. And return your attention to your thought for the day, to your mantra, to awareness. But a hook you haven't seen hooks you for sure. So again, 711B says, how is it helpful to acknowledge the conditioning, reinforcing triads? Resting in self recognizes the hooks into illusion. This is specifically here recommending meditation. But again, journaling also works. But resting in self recognizes the hooks into illusion. Through wise recognition of these hooks, resting observes them without being pulled into conditioning. And again, resting here is really referring to that meditative state of setting back and watching the thoughts, watching where your attention gets pulled into, observing it all. What is the advantage of not being pulled into conditioning? By staying outside of the reinforcing triads, mind, which is supported by both triads, grows weak. This is what we're talking about. We're now starting to pull the threads out of the tapestry. Weakened, it dies, right? Mind, remember I defined mind as those thoughts that are coming from the illusion. Those thoughts that are coming from the illusion that you think are your thoughts, they start to slow down. There starts to be fewer and fewer of them, and eventually they can completely die. When there is no mind, there is no delusion, so reality is realized. And I think some people get scared that no mind means no intelligence. But you got to remember the definition of mind. Mind is talking about the movement of those thoughts that come from the illusion. No illusory thoughts, right? Doesn't that sound nice? No illusory thoughts. It doesn't mean no intelligence, no wisdom. All right, my time is up, so I'm going to release the mic and turn this over to, I guess, Jacqueline is up next for our movie group. So thanks, y'all, and goodbye.